Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
Don't you always want to hear it right from the horse's mouth? I certainly do. I want the best and the brightest minds in the industry to tell me about it. Yeah, Tell Me About It is my latest podcast. Since I come across so many interesting people in the industry, some of my favorite students, they ask me if I can speak to some really intelligent and well-known people on hot and trending topics, you know, like content, influencers, health, branding, entrepreneurship, and more. Who am I to quiz the best and brightest, you ask? Well, I am Siddharth Deshmukh, also known as the Traveling Professor. Maybe you've heard me before somewhere. Yeah, I teach across various institutes. Join me and new experts every week over two parts where we dissect these topics and try to make sense of them. Hopefully, learn something about it when they tell me about it. This podcast is an HT Smartcast original and is available on htsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Ashton, yeah. Let me top this with asking Ashton an even tougher question, right? We've talked of the social media pressure. Now, Ashton, you and I are actually kind of in social media and doing a lot of work, which is kind of in digital, right? I mean, you run podcasts and stuff like that. Now, here's the question. Everyone keeps uploading their achievements on LinkedIn, which builds a sense of mental pressure, and we feel like, a waste. Internally, you're feeling like a waste completely. Everyone's doing personal branding and I'm like getting fucked over. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with something like that?
You never put up your own worst moments, right? So it is something that you have to learn, that nobody's ever going to put up their worst moments. It is unfortunately a reality, because so many of us are growing up with issues about hating ourselves, thinking that we're not enough. And this boils down to this I am not enough thought, which has always existed as human beings, but now is being amplified when we see people like this. The way that I see it is, you have to be very, very particular about who you follow. And so very often what I do is I go through my Instagram and weed out people. Does this account make me feel good or make me feel worse? Out. Does this person make me feel good or make me feel worse? Out.
It's a very therapeutic.
Because you have to protect yourself.
Ashton, I'm just curious. What are the kind of people that make you feel worse?
That's a good question.
Undue pressure, for example, one. There are people who are constantly putting up things about the news. So I think reading the news is something that is causing a lot of damage, right? There is something where, like, you get fatigue from being compassionate, right? So one of the podcasts was called Compassion Fatigue. And how many things can you be concerned about in life? Make three things your topic bus, yeah? Beyond that, what are you going to be going after?
I'm telling you, Sergio, my timeline is the most fractured, because half of my people are academics, half of them are industry guys. So it's like the right wing meets the left wing on my timeline. I go completely mad. It's nutty. Sorry, but that's
a real question.
Okay. No, I'm sure you're way better off, because not too many academics. Ashton, there's somebody who's actually saying, hey, where is Ashton? Okay, can you ask Ashton to show his beautiful farm or something like that? So the, you know, that's a wonderful thing. Maybe we can use it as part of our blooper or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it started if your Wi-Fi holds up.
Fingers crossed.
I don't know.
Right.
Fingers crossed.
I hope Vodafone.
Okay. All right. So here's a question, Shaitu. Again, back to you. Right? I'm asking you this one. What habit should a student build who is from a top B school, who has invested 20 lakhs, but his job is bloody uncertain, especially in these COVID-y times? Okay. What is one asana that you can give to change his state of mind?
It's not really an asana. It's easier said than done, but this again is a very practical solution.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask him to sit in a corner and count the number of breaths that he takes in a minute.
That's interesting.
If it is an average human being takes between 15 to 18 breaths in a second.
In a minute.
If he's as stressed as he sounds, chances are it'll cross 20, which is not a good thing. So I'll ask him to keep sitting in that corner 3 times, 4 times a day for 2 minutes each. And count his breaths and get it down to less than 10.
That is interesting. You know, I was actually, Shaiju, just as an aside, I was reading on Huberman. There's a guy who's done a lot of work in breathing, as in you too. It's fascinating to know how neuroscience is actually honing into the science of breathing. We've all heard of Wim Hof and the rest of it, but it is really interesting to know that there's so many neuroscientists who are getting into breathing and using it as not just an offline intervention technique, but like, as you suggested, an online intervention technique to actually change your state of mind, which is brilliant. Ashton, you have any tips for changing state of mind while being in the moment, when you're stressed out?
Breathing, for sure. So there are tons of breathing techniques. For example, the box breath is a lovely technique.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, anything which can go beyond breathing as well. I mean, since I just talked of breathing, it would be great if you can bring in something else, you know, contextual or whatever.
Sure. Looking at a point in infinity. Okay. So, for example, you look out of your window and look as far away as you can. Right. And you will notice after a while, the world around you fades away. Two things happen. You lose a sense of self in that. And every aspect of the world starts feeling like it's a part of you. So, have you been to Africa and have you gone to the Gorongoro crater?
I have not. I want to. Bucket list.
It's mind-blowing. So, the same thing happens when you stand on a mountain in the Himalayas. You stand there and you just see vastness. You see nothing up close. The problem is when we live our life up close, we feel everything is about us. When we see something so far away, an aspect of our ego disappeared. So these are very, very powerful, you know, techniques that you can use just to very quickly change your mind space.
Okay, so what I'm understanding from both things, I mean, whether I'm doing the breathing thing or whether I'm doing the staring into space or infinity thing, what I'm getting is a different perspective. And I think the common underlying pattern that I'm seeing is there are some techniques, there are some ways in which you can actually get a different perspective on the same situation, whether it's through calming yourself down and therefore expanding time, or whether it's looking at space and looking at infinity. That's brilliant, actually. I'm sure a lot of this would be useful for the younger guys, but I'm still a little unconvinced because after you for these guys, right? So if I meet about 10 people, and maybe that's my bias speaking, if I meet 10 of these guys as students or young working professionals, they have terrible habits. They just have the worst habits ever. And I know that they are in a situation wherein they have fed it into themselves that they are, you know, they have to live like that. So if you have to say one thing that will help them, would it still be your optimizing argument? And if it is your optimizing argument, what would you say it as? I just want to bring closure to that.
The way I would look at it is you aren't going to force them into change. You can't force people into change.
Yeah.
Even when I work with people, so I work with a lot of college kids as well, but not if their mother comes and tells me to work with them. I work with them if they come and say that, listen, I need this. I need this aspect of me to work properly. I can't function like this anymore. My mind is all over the place.
Yeah.
I will then come and work with you. But not if a mother comes in, somebody else. Because you can't force somebody into it. It's part of their journey that they have to go through. Right? We can see that the habits are off. But they can't see it because they're inside. So till they realize that there's something better in store, they're going to continue in that process. So my thing is, you can't force that aspect of it. It is a part of the journey that they have to go through.
So that's an interesting take. So basically what you're saying is that when the student is ready, the master will appear.
Almost. But like when the student is ready, at least, right? Yeah. So the master appears because you start searching.
Yeah. I think that's a very...
Habit coach,
yeah.
Sorry, go ask me. This
podcast has a lot of students listening in. And I didn't know that would be the case. So a lot of the questions are around these bad habits. How do I stop smoking? How do I stop porn? How do I get out of this and actually start studying? Those are the kinds of questions that I get often. And once that realization takes place, that, okay, this is the thing I need to change. Now I'll figure out what to change.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Shaju, you were saying something.
Yeah, I was saying that's actually what Ashton makes is a very important point, because when you're a student, there's a sense of immortality that nothing can ever go wrong.
Correct.
To kind of shake that is well nigh impossible. Even I have all my sessions are in the morning. I don't have sessions in the afternoon. So if you want to, you have to wake up at, even when I went on campus, you know, the faculty were shocked when I said that my session started at 7 o'clock. Who's going to wake up? But the faculty people did. You know. And even within students, we give them very little credit. And when Ashton mentions that he has students, I'm not surprised, because there are seekers even within students. You know, and for all the vilifying that we do of the internet also makes available guys like you who are available for people who want to seek. Right? So it's opened up all kinds of possibilities, but those numbers are few right now. But I'm very, very hopeful. And I think that is growing much, much more significantly than we believe it is right now.
Both of you believe that you have to be a morning person? Sorry, it's a direct question, but I just want to figure out from both of you. Ashden, what do you think of? Because you talked of circadian rhythms and since Shaju says, you know, morning. And what are the benefits? So Ashden, to go first.
So I find myself the most productive in the morning. So I finish all my work by 9 o'clock, and then it's party time for me, 9 o'clock in the morning. But the way that it works for other people is that if you go by the circadian clock, you can have people who work and function best from 12 in the night to 3 in the morning.
That's
right?
True. Yeah.
And, and there are people like that, and forcing people into a certain working time frame doesn't make sense at that point of time. It's just that the majority, 60%, work best from the 8 or 9 o'clock onwards till your 5 o'clock, which is why that has become the norm. But so there are people... I don't force people to wake up at 4.
Okay. All right. Shaju, your point?
I actually disagree with Ashton on that. I think humans are not nocturnal beings. We never were.
Okay.
You know, and so
you are very nocturnal in my comment.
I was. you know, The thing, Sid, is that, and it goes back to the circadian rhythm, right? It wasn't until the invention of electricity and light that people began to work at night. But otherwise, humans always rose with the sun and went to sleep with the sun. And therefore, you're conditioned to be most productive when the sun is out. You might convince yourself otherwise, and we're all creatures of habit. You end up being what you want to be at the end of the day, but it is counterproductive in the long run.
That's an interesting point of view. I wonder if both of you have seen a movie called Insomniac. I think it stars Al Pacino, and it's a crazy ass movie. It's set in Alaska, and it's when, you know, the sun almost never sets, and it just has a crazy impact. Just a recommendation. Okay, question for Ashden: is it too late to start a fitness journey? Body shaming makes me feel even more averse to picking up a workout. Any way to break the cycle of laziness and start?
So the most important thing is, first, get out of the habit of calling yourself fat or whatever that you are calling yourself and relating your identity to it. If you start calling yourself, yeah, no problem. Yeah. If you start calling yourself, I am the person who's on a fitness journey, then this starts making sense in your mind, saying that, okay, now I need to start improving the way that I eat, maybe. And this now I need to start improving the way that I move. And honestly, you don't have to spend an hour or two in the gym to exercise. The exercise habit starts by putting on your shoes and putting on your workout clothes. And then make it a 4-minute workout. Make it a 10-minute workout. And slowly start creating your journey that way. Instead of shaming yourself, saying that, you know, I'm like this only. Or people are telling me like I'm like this only.
Okay.
The moment you start creating that identity shift and you start putting in at least one or two such habits in your life, it starts taking a different trajectory altogether.
Wonderful. Okay. That's good. So start small is what I'm hearing from you, and kind of build it up from there. Question for Shaiju. A solution for people who are continuously having backaches and constant headaches because of sitting on laptops for long. Is there anything that you would recommend from an...
Yeah, so sitting for long periods of time ends up compressing the spine.
Yeah.
The base of your spine.
Yeah.
So there are specific exercises that you can do to kind of elongate your spine. Like in yoga, there's a fantastic asana called the Paschimottanasana. It's a forward bend. It's a sitting forward bend. But it's not something that you will be able to do when you're in office. But in office, if you actually have a chair, you place your chair in front of you and get maybe about 4 feet away from the chair, 5 feet away from the chair, and gently bend down to touch the chair while, you know, slightly folding your knees, because you need to be careful that you don't overdo it. Okay. So there are small, gentle stretching exercises that kind of can be done. And it is very, very important, especially for those who are sitting all the time. And usually, you know, spinal compression, back problems happen as a result of weak hip flexors. You know, so also working on your is something that very, very few of us do, especially after we've got Western toilets in India.
Yeah.
Right? The original Indian toilets were fantastic for opening up of the hips, which are actually meant to take the body's weight. They're meant to be weight-bearing, not the back. You know, so these little shifts in our behaviors have resulted in all these adding up to us, the problem that we have today.
That is pretty interesting. Ashton, question for you on top of what Shai just said. So I want to know, what point do you genuinely feel that you kind of changed your equation with yourself? Because for a habit coach, I guess you have to change your equation with yourself, right? And I asked that question for Shaiju, but I didn't ask you. So I just wanted to close that loop on that question. When did you actually become a habit coach mentally?
So it happened when I was extremely overweight and unhealthy. And very, like I was telling you, I would sleep about 3 hours a night, maybe. And on one particular day, I don't think I slept for 48 hours. We were getting a presentation ready and I collapsed on the floor.
Right.
You know, sweat. I had a nice tummy at the time. And I had no idea what was going on in my life. Health had not even occurred to me. So there was unfortunate event like this that took place. And being the typical type A person that I was, I said that next goal is get a six pack. So it was an aesthetic goal that started this off as a journey for me. And the next year, when I lost my fat, got a six pack, I realized how easy this is. And why are more people not doing this? And on that journey, it had to be exercise plus nutrition plus sleep plus de-stressing plus water, breathing. All those things had to work together for you to get to that point. So once that happened and people started coming to me for advice, what do I do now? And I got so deep into it that all the books I was reading was only about it. That's, I think, when an identity shift happened. And my goal was never to be a fit person. It was, I should never be afraid of my body again. So if tomorrow you tell me, go climb this mountain, sure, aram se. Never be fearful of my body. And that was the thought that led me through it after this whole six-pack goal died down.
So what you're saying is the way in which you are, it changed because A, you wanted to be aesthetically look good. That was the trigger point. Did you see yourself evolve as a person? Did you see actually something fundamentally change within you? And the question is for Shaiju as well. You can answer this after. Do you think, because you've embraced this identity or part of your identity, whatever, did you change fundamentally as a person? than what you were, say. Obviously, everyone changes with time, but this is a very specific shift into a healthier lifestyle or even habits, as Ashton says. Any one of you can go first.
Do you want to take it first?
Sure. I don't think so, Sid. It's not as if I'm devoid of all the quote-unquote bad habits that I had.
Human.
I've never really overdone anything even before this. Everything in moderation.
Yeah, including
whatever it is, right? And you know when to take your foot off the pedal.
Yeah.
So is there a shift? I think I'm more chilled than I used to be. I think if that was possible.
It's not. Ashton, how about you?
I see a big change. I don't recognize the person I was before. It was coming off from a place of extremely low self-confidence to a place of becoming confident and allowing that to grow. So I would normally never talk to people or shy away to becoming very, very social because I now had a message. I had something to share. So my identity shift was so dramatic that I honestly wouldn't recognize myself like what I was 6 years ago.
Yeah, you know, what I like about this conversation is that we are getting diametrically different points of views at some point in time, but they are both making sense to me as a listener, right? So it's awesome because this is making it very layered. So here's a couple of questions. Shaiju, here, I don't know whether you can answer it. I don't know whether you're a vegetarian or non-vegetarian, but I am a vegetarian. Can you recommend an eating routine at home which will provide me a balanced diet and keep me fit? Okay. What do you say? Any one of you can. And by the way, Ashton, question for you. Can you recommend a workout channel or a routine for a beginner?
Sure. So the food one is interesting. Basically, look at your plate and make sure that about 45% of it is filled with vegetables. Make sure that 20% of it is filled with your carbohydrates in terms of your roti, etc. It can become 20 to 10%, but not more than that. And the remaining is your protein, which are your dals and rajma. The best way for a vegetarian to get their proteins in is to mix their dals with the rice, because the dals have a certain amount of amino acids and the rice have the other that are essential in it. So that combination gives you the complete protein profile. So in a very brief nutshell, I know this is not about nutrition, so that's the way that I would approach it.
Thank you.
I have a couple of things, right? The eating is a function of three things, right? It's what you eat, how much you eat, when you eat.
Correct.
What you eat, I mean, if you're cooking, you have a certain amount of control over it, but then it gets into so many technicalities. You get into proteins, carbohydrates, amino acids, big pain in the ass. Now, how much you eat is something that you can kind of control. In yoga, they say you fill half your stomach with food, half a quarter with water, and a quarter with air, irrespective of what you kind of eat. I think most Indian households have a reasonably balanced diet. What you can definitely control is when you eat it. So there's this whole intermittent fasting thing that's kind of come in, right? When you don't really need to eat as much as you think you need to eat. So if you actually reduce the intervals of your eating, you eat in an 8-hour interval, eat whatever the hell you want, whatever you want in those 8 hours, and then fast for 16 hours, it'll serve you, it'll stand you in good stead.
That's pretty interesting, actually. I've never tried fasting myself, but I have heard a lot of very positive things.
It's very difficult to start off
fasting
with, but once you get into it, it's I think it's one of the more important things that anyone can do if you're chasing good health.
Wow.
So when we came to the farm here, we realized that we thought it was a holiday. So we were eating breakfast, post-breakfast, pre-lunch, lunch. So it was just mad. Now we finally gotten on to a fasting routine where we don't eat for 18 hours. So 2 o'clock is our meal and 7 o'clock is the next meal. And after that, we don't eat at all. It's been perfect for all of us, parents and me. It's just been brilliant.
Interesting. Okay, I had promised you a googly question.
Before that, I just got a message. Sid, I just got a message of admonishment from a teacher of mine in yoga about what to do for the spine. Apparently, I gave a very complex answer when something is as simple as if you're sitting on your chair at work, lean forward, rest your stomach and chest on your thighs and put your head down so that your blood rushes down and your spine gets elongated.
Oh, that's nice.
Hold it there for a minute. Take about 4 or 5 deep breaths. Do it once in an hour.
Brilliant. Hey, shout out to your teacher. Thank you so much. Shout out to your teacher. This is wonderful. This is the way in which we want to do this. Absolutely. All right. So here's my googly to both of you because we are nearing the end of our time together. So the googly is for Shaiju, and you have to explain why, okay? So that and the googly for Ashdin. So Ashdin, the googly is, which habit do you struggle with? Okay, and why and what do you want to do? And Shaiju, obviously, which asana do you struggle with and why and what are you doing to sort it out?
You know, I don't really struggle with anything. Again, it goes back to the chilled out learning in yoga, right? In yoga, you don't expect anything to happen to you. You make it happen. I mean, you don't work too hard to make it happen. It'll happen to you. I, for example, must be the one who's taken the longest in history to get into a headstand. It took me 5 years. And I practice for about an hour and a half every day. It took me 5 years to get into the headstand.
Were you frightened of the headstand?
No. Okay. The first thing you break is, I've fallen about 5,000 times. You learn to fall first. But I fell. But that's not the point, right? Is that a struggle? No, it's not. I mean, you can look at it as a struggle. But then as part of the learning, now I can do a headstand here and fall, and people next to me won't even know that I've fallen. I'm actually fall like a cat. You know what I mean? So you also learn in that process. So there's really no struggle in yoga. You only do what you are capable of doing. And I think there's a great life lesson in that as well.
Wonderful. Now, that's a multi-layered answer, yeah, Shaiju. You also got away from it. But good one. And what about Ashdin? What do you think?
The habit I struggle with the most is getting rid of my phone. So I too am a phone addict, and creating that is the most difficult one for me, which is why I probably have the most number of habits associated with getting rid of the phone. Because I've tried every single thing that I can possibly try.
Yeah.
And then slowly making peace with it is the only aspect. So now,
What do you think has relatively worked for you more?
So outsourcing as much of the phone usage as I can. So getting a social media person to handle as much janjat as possible. That was one. And the second is not picking up the phone in the morning and putting the phone away at night.
That's really interesting. What I tend to do is when I'm going to go for a workout or whatever, I think it's just, I just keep the phone away, very, very far away. And so for example, I just force myself to have times when I don't have a phone and I'm working out, for example. And that tends to... Okay, so here's the question that the Colosseum team is saying, ask each other a question. You've obviously shared, different points of view, some concurring point of view. So Shaiju, if there was one question you wanted to ask Ashdin, and if Ashdin wanted to ask a question to Shaiju, what would they
be? So Lemmy, what are the biggest habits that people want to change? What is the biggest thing the country today, going by the subset of the people that you coach, Ashdin?
I think the biggest, it's a very, very layered question because it depends on which aspect of their life. But I think one of the biggest problems is with regards to food and the way food is being consumed right now. We are very quickly moving towards a junk food world, and we're moving towards the American diet instead of the Indian diet. So I'm seeing that as a big, big, big struggle coming up. And moving people away from that is going to be something that's going to be a challenge for sure.
That's interesting. Well, Ashdin, your turn now.
For you, was yoga first a physical journey or a spiritual journey? What triggered it off for you?
When I got into yoga, I had no clue. Like, I went straight for a teacher's training course. So I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what hit me. But what it did to me physically was what got me onto it in the first place. Because I couldn't touch my ankles with my toes, you know, when I entered the course. But when I got out of it, I could stand on my palms, and I didn't think that was possible at all. So that opened up so many eventualities. Possibilities for me. Then I went and did an advanced teacher's training course, which is when the spiritual aspect kind of kicked in. That was a good 2 years after I actually got into yoga.
Okay, interesting.
That's interesting. Physical first, and then the spiritual. But guys,
yeah, but in everything I teach, I completely de-emphasize the physical. The physical is only a means to an end. I completely de-emphasize it. Yeah.
That's interesting. So you're not teaching the way in which you learned.
No.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's good. Actually, that's good in a way. Hey guys, 6 o'clock. We've reached our time limit. I think we must have expanded attention spans of people. But thank you so much. It was brilliant talking to both of you. If I've upset anybody or ruffled any feathers, I apologize. Mistake all mine. I think you will find yourself a lot of new fans, both of you, Ashden and Shaiju, and for all the wonderful work that you're doing. Thank you so much. We are going to shut the live session now. Do stay on there because the Colosseum team would also like to say a goodbye. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Thank you so very much.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a good one, right? More of where that came from soon. Want to reach out to me? I'm Siddharth Deshmukh, and I'm the traveling professor on Instagram. You'll find the funny side of me there. And on LinkedIn, I'm a little bit more serious, but I'm still the traveling professor. To give us feedback, you can reach out to us on HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, the usual suspects. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno naye nazariye se. And join me in the journey. Onward ho!
This was an HT Smartcast original.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.